So I said in the email that this is the most important session, and it really is the most important session, unless you count maybe the introduction of the book. This is, to my mind, the most important session until you get to the last chapter. Because last week we read the conclusion of Eov's remarks. Job has made his last speech. He has said what he had to say. He has said it at length. He talked about why he's angry at God. He talked about why he's angry at the visitors. He talked about how he has descended from what he once was, the person he was in terms of his social status, the person he was in terms of his benevolence to others. He talks about how he has suffered and how it is entirely unjustified. He swears a dozen times or more to his good behavior. He didn't do bad things. He did good things. And therefore, he cannot understand why in the world he is suffering as he is. There must be no justice. It was a thundering last speech. And you then have to ask yourself, now that Job has finished his words, right? It ended. Tamu divrei Iyov. Right? Fin. He's done. The words of Job are finished. Now you have to ask, so who won? the whole book was supposed to be about the trial of humanity as represented by Job. He is our champion. Satan alleged in the beginning of the book that human beings are only good, and we have to define good in a minute, but human beings are only good because they get lollipops from God. And if you stop giving them lollipops and instead you take things away from them, then they're not going to be good anymore. That was his allegation. And God responded, no, 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 no. Human beings are better than that. And my prime example is Job. He is a good man, right? We talked about him. Tam Yashar, Yirei Elokim, Sar Meirah. He's perfect. He stays away from doing evil. He is straight. This is the best of humanity. Put him to the test and see what happens, Satan says. And God says, okay. And first he takes away his children, takes away all of his property, and still Job is described as not having blamed God. And so Satan says, well, yeah, because you didn't hit him personally. And God says, okay, you can hit him, just don't kill him. And he hits him, Job has boils, and still he doesn't seem to go over the line. His wife pushes him further. She says, blaspheme against God and die. He doesn't seem particularly receptive to that advice. And then, chapter after chapter, the visitors, as we've said earlier, push him further by antagonizing him. And let's see where he's going to go as chapter after chapter he is pushed. And so the question now is, the question we have to address is, so who won?
Did he or didn't he?
Is Job still Yirei Elokim, the good man that he was promised to be in the beginning of the book? Did God win, Satan lose? Or did Satan successfully push him over the line? Who won the trial of humanity? What would you say? Well, I have a vote here. We should do it with a ballot, you know? We have a vote for Job. Job won. Carla supports. Job won. Shane also. If Carla and Shana vote for it, I'm not sure anyone's going to be willing to vote against at this point.
Well, why could Job not have won? He has not denied the existence of God in his life.
Well, the last paragraph...
Debbie asked the question. This is the key question. He hasn't denied the existence of God in his life, and so what we really need to know, in order to answer the question of who won, we have to know what the test was in the first place. Was the test denying the existence of God, the presence of God? And it's funny, because when we started the book, I thought we actually did a good job of covering sort of the introduction and where things are going. But as I looked back in my notes, I realized we did not do a sufficient job. We didn't do a sufficiently good job of defining exactly what the test is. What is it that Satan says human beings are, or are not, as the case may be? What are we talking about? So I call you back to chapter 1, sentences 9 to 11.
I've got two remarks, basically.
Yeah.
Why is suddenly the Satan so important? back in there.
So for that, I'm going to refer you to the recordings from the beginning, because that I'm not going to revisit. These are good questions, and had you been here for the first couple of weeks, instead of living in Quebec, you could have... catch the recordings first, and then we can catch up after that. But there was a lot of time spent on that one.
Second, how could possibly Eov win anything at all? Everything had been taken away from him.
Yeah.
Okay, then he won't be. He will still be very happy. Big deal.
I don't know what you're.
We're
at the end. In other words, everything that's going to happen from now on, we're going to have a bunch of speeches by someone named Elihu, when we start to figure out what he's doing in our book. Then God is going to respond. There will be a little bit of a give and take with Job at the end, but it's clearly post-test, because at that point, God has already spoken. So in other words, this is it. That's why I said this is the most important session, because we need to know. So who won? We've been sitting here waiting for the last 31 chapters for this.
Do me a favor, I just come from the optometrist. Would you read 9 to 11 out loud? I can't see anything.
Okay.
Sorry.
So that's all right. Did you drive here? That's comforting. I can't read verses 9 to 11, but I don't think I hit anybody.
Tell me what your driver is.
Okay.
They always
stay off the Allen, please. Page 1621 is what we're talking about. 1621. And here we go. Vayan ha-Satan es Hashem vayomar. Satan responds to God. He says the following. This is after God has described Job as being wonderful. He is Tam Yashar Yirei Elokim Sar Meira. He is perfect. He is straight. He is Yirei Elokim, which I take to mean God revering or God fearing. And he is Sar Meira. He stays away from evil. When Satan comes to God and says, I've been traveling all over, and we took that to mean not simply a statement about travel, but that he's going to indict humanity, because that's his job, is the indictment of humanity. So, Satan says to God, "Hachinam yarei Iyov Elokim." He picks up on one trait out of the four. Okay, God described Job as being tam, which is perfect or complete or simple in the sense that there's nothing corrupt about him. Yashar, righteous in his conduct. I assume it's conduct oriented. That's usually what yashar is. Yarei Elokim. God fearing, God revering. Sar Meira, he stays away from evil. Satan seizes on the third one specifically and says, is it for nothing that he is God revering, God fearing? You protected, you, God, capital Y, you protected him, his household, and everything he had all around. You blessed the deeds of his hands. His cattle, or his property alternatively, spread throughout the land. But, Shlachna yadcha, send forth your hand, God. Strike. Kol asher lo could mean strike everything he has or strike anything he has. I've seen it done both ways. Im lo apanecha yivarcheka. And see if he will not bless you to your face.
Curse you.
Which means to curse. Right. It's a euphemism that we understood and we talked about in the beginning of the book. That's the initial test. So you think that Job is sincere in being Yirei Elokim, in being a God-fearing, God-revering person? It's only because you help him. If you hit him, he'll act differently. And then we get the scene in which his kids are killed and his property is lost, and he still does not say bad things about God. That was the end of chapter 1. And so in chapter 2, sentences 4 to 5, we get a reprising of this debate. First in sentence 3, God says, you notice Job, he's still Tam Yashar Yirei Elokim Sar Meira, the same four traits, and you, for nothing, caused me to swallow him up for what? What was this all about? And the Satan responds to God and he says to him, Or Ba'ad Or, skin for skin. V'chol asher la'ish yitain ba'ad nafsho, people will give everything they have in order to save their lives. It's really about his skin, and hence the boils on his skin. Ulam, but shlachna yadcha v'gail atzmo v'al b'saro. Send forth your hand and hit him, hit his flesh. And then imlo el panecha yivarcheka, see if he will not bless you, again with that other meaning, to your face. I don't think there's a difference between al panecha and el panecha. I translate them the same way. But the question then is, what is he saying that Job is going to do? And we need to know what the bet is. What's the wager in order to understand it? And unfortunately, the book really seems to lose interest in this initial story because we're not going to see, before the book is over, we will not see Satan return. There isn't going to be a second conversation, really third conversation between God and the Satan, in which God says, ha ha, you lost, or Satan says, you know, I win. We're not going to find anything out. It's as though we just got sidetracked, which we did, in the sense that, as I've mentioned before, we switched from putting human beings on trial to putting God on trial. That's where the book, you know, that's the shift of the book, and that's going to continue to the end. So we sort of lost interest in trying humanity. But we need to know. So what happened, Shana?
So this has been helpful to me because it makes it seem clear to me that the other elements of Job's characterization are not in play. His tam, his yeshai, his sur meira. Satan is not interested in those. He thinks they'll survive whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
So Eel has not been behaving well just in order to obtain God's love and support. Right? It's not about behavior. It's about his belief.
Is that why he ignores the other three? I think it's a reasonable explanation. I don't think it's the only possible explanation.
It's the reading that comes to me now.
Okay.
That's exactly what the friends focus on. They focus on the other three.
Well, they also focus on the relationship with God,
but
right?
But also a lot about his behavior, and then in response he says how good he was to other people, and
right.
how to share, and
right.
he's answering the accusations, saying, I didn't steal from the widow.
Right, I mean, he keeps pointing to his acts as being Yashar. He
right.
has also talked about being Yirei Elokim. He has insisted that he is Yirei Elokim. We saw it in his oaths most recently in chapter 31. But it's not as though he has only focused on behavior and not at all on his relationship with God. Yeah.
I think that all the others are in the past, what he's done in the past. And what Satan wants him to do something different now.
Bob, bless you. What do you mean?
Well, if he was Tom and all that stuff in the past, as he said in the big speech, he was good to everybody, blah, blah. Now he's got nothing. He can't give much to anybody. What is he going to do? He's going to start running around killing people. Whereas, to bless God, he can do that.
Right. So I think that's a key question here is, what is Satan expecting to be the evidence of his victory? What's going to prove that he's right?
Loss of faith.
Yeah. Is that what he said? He didn't say loss of faith.
No, but he does indicate that, and that's where the book seems to go.
How has he indicated it?
I can't read.
Oh, I'm sorry, but to make the argument. He said to blaspheme.
What? To bless him to your face. Thank you, Shana, my teacher.
But blessing to his face doesn't necessarily mean lack of faith, right? They always say the person who's angry at God is a believer.
Right.
Yeah,
but I think that's the point. I think that's exactly the point. He's angry at God.
But he still has faith.
You're angry at God,
just believe.
But
he
doesn't curse them either.
Right.
So that's not cursing.
I want to move this a little bit further in our discussion, because I think there's a lot that we have to say here. First of all, cursing here can't mean what it usually means in our jargon. In other words, usually cursing means wishing bad things should happen to somebody. Right? That's usually what it is. It's some kind of an expression of a wish or a prayer or an invocation that something bad should happen to somebody else. That's the way it's used in the context of Tanakh. Think of Bilam wanting to curse the Jews as a clear example of that. But that makes no sense when you're talking about God. And God hitting Job is not going to make Job more likely to say, boy, I hope that God's car gets a flat tire. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. That's not what this means.
The Midrash Rabbah translates it as blasphemy.
Right, so we have to get to that. I'm working my way through options.
The converse, every bracha is baruch hatashem, so you're blessing, what is blessing
mean? Right, so as part of this, you might also want to ask, what does it mean to bless in the real sense of bless, as opposed to the bless as a euphemism for cursing? Carla?
I was just wondering if there's, because you or Gina said, if you're angry at God, then you actually, or you said, you believe in God, and because otherwise you cannot be angry at nothing, that would be silly.
You can try.
Since Shelton also has a reputation in Yoshayahu of sort of propping himself up and making himself equal to Hashem, maybe that is something if Eeyore thinks that he's so all mighty and right and whatever, that he puts himself on the same level of God and to criticize God's actions toward him.
Right. So I think that, I want to take that and develop it as an idea. It's much more, I think, about how he views himself in the relationship with God. And based on the context where this whole discussion appears and where the Satan's words appear, going back to sentence 9 in chapter 1, where Satan says to him, "Is it for nothing that Job is Yirei Elokim, is God revering?" The opposition is really between this cursing, call it blasphemy as Art Scroll does, and on the other side, being God revering. Whatever cursing is, it's the opposite of being reverential towards God. That is the way I understand what's going on. Now, that hasn't answered our question yet. But what will prove Satan right is if Job is no longer a reverer of God. But now let's take this a little bit further, because we need to understand what that means. In general, in Tanakh, Yirat Elokim, reverence for God, means you behave well. Or it's associated with behaving well. So for example, I gave you a reference on the sheet to Bereishit, to Genesis chapter 20, sentence 11, in which, you don't have to turn to it, it's okay. That's when Abraham and Sarah go to the city of Gerar. And Abraham says, oh boy, they're going to take Sarah, so she has to identify herself as my sister rather than as my wife, otherwise they'll kill me and take her anyway. And when Abimelech calls him on it, and says, what'd you do that for? Abraham says, Rak ein yirat Elokim b'makom hazeh. There is no reverence for God here. V'haraguni al devarishti. And they would kill me because of my wife. So Yirat Elokim is associated with righteous behavior there. Yes?
But strong enough, in the context of Avraham Avinu, during the Akedah, twice, Yirat Elokim atavil hasach
v'chesh. Correct.
That's in the context of a test as well.
Correct. Correct. And the parallels between Abraham and Job are legion. I think that's definitely one of them. It's also about, is he Yirei Elokim? Does he revere God? Understood there as somebody also who will obey that which God has said to do. Yes?
You said that cursing shows no reverence for God. Is that...
Well, the way it's presented in the beginning of our book is that it's sort of the opposite of reverence for God. There is the person who is God revering, and then there's the person who curses God.
Well, cursing other people.
Oh, no, that's its own discussion, yeah. That's its own discussion. So, potentially related, but it's its own discussion. The problem I have with interpreting Yirat Elokim as righteous behavior in this book, right, if you stopped now, then what you would end up saying is that Job's test is, will he continue to behave righteously? Will he continue to not kill people? Will he continue to help the needy or whatever? Like, that would be your test. However, Yirat Elokim isn't used in this book as a term for behavior. Only something associated with good behavior, but not as itself being good behavior. There are a couple of verses which, depending how you read them, might go in that direction. I gave you on your sheet a reference to chapter 6, sentence 14, and chapter 28, sentence 28, but not really so. Chapter 6, sentence 14, when we read it at the time, we noted, probably doesn't mean that, bless you. That was the Lamas Bereyehu Chesed. I'm not even going to bother going through the verse again because it admits many possible readings, but it's hard to read that as equating lack of Yirat Elokim with bad behavior. You might be able to see it in chapter 28, sentence 28. That one I'll go back to just for a second. In chapter 28, sentence 28, it's on page 1657. That was the end of the wisdom poem. Right? After we talked about how you can't find wisdom anywhere, right? Contrasting it with wealth and the gems and so forth. So we concluded by saying that God has wisdom. And we concluded with, Vayomer la Adam, hein yiras Hashem, hi chokhmah. So there we said, Yirat Hashem, reverence for God. Notice it's Hashem, not Elohim. I'm sure there's something to be said about that. But he said, Yirat Hashem is, chokhmah is wisdom. Visur meira bina. And staying away from evil is understanding. So there is a sort of equation of Yirat Elohim and sur meira, staying away from bad behavior. And we talked about it as wise behavior at the time. So maybe you could see it there, but really it's not seen in the book. The idea that righteous behavior is the same thing as reverence for God. If that was our test, if our test would be, does Job endorse righteous behavior at the end of chapter 31, what would you say? Aljeva smiling, she says, yes. I would tend to agree. Job has defended the importance of righteous behavior to the hilt. He held it up as the standard. He never once counseled, so go steal from people. And he's not in a position to do it himself. But he never promoted that kind of approach. But I don't think that's really the test in our book. A second possible explanation of Yirei Elokim is to take the course definition of Yirei Elokim, course with an A, which is to say, I'm afraid God's going to hit me. Right? Yirei Elokim, I am God-fearing in the most basic definition of fearing. That I'm afraid God's going to hit me. Is that what we're talking about here?
He already hit him.
Yeah, he already hit him, yeah. Go ahead, Jules.
The problem with the concept of Yiras Elohim is that according to many, that's an inbred instinct which will never go away.
Satan doesn't think so.
No, but he might be alone.
Satan, he's a cynic and a skeptic.
Maybe, and maybe that's part of the debate. Chutz Meyirat Shemayim. Well, that suggests the opposite. That suggests that it's actually a product of your logic and your own decision. If you're saying it's not in the hands of God, you're suggesting that it's up to you.
Or inbred, it's far from where.
Yeah, but the whole principle, if you accept the principle that HaKol B'Yedei Shemayim Chutz Meyirat Shemayim, then you don't accept that it's in a natural thing, because that's part of an imperative to the human being. You have to do this yourself. We wouldn't give the imperative if it wasn't within your capacity. Yeah, Shana.
It's such a degraded and infantilizing kind of relationship. Why would God want that kind of...
If that was really what this book was about, God says, Job is really good. He's afraid I'm going to hit him. And Satan says, he's only afraid you're going to hit him because you haven't hit him yet. If you hit him, then he won't be afraid you're going to hit him. What are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense. There is one point in the book, in chapter 9, sentence 35, where Yirat Elokim could be read as afraid that God's going to hit you. But it's not the meaning in the beginning of the book. It just doesn't make any sense. Why would God make a point of this with the Satan? Why would I need a book to talk about this? And why would the test make any sense? Yeah, just hit him and then he won't be afraid that you're going to hit him? What does that even mean? I take away everything he has and then he won't be afraid because there's nothing to lose?
You know, there's a lot of talk, right?
Oh, yeah. That, you could have named the book Talk.
You know, I understand that. But, you know, people can say one thing and then put to the test, they operate somewhat differently.
Yes.
Job is still talking.
Yeah.
He hasn't been left to his own devices
right.
to see exactly how he's going to operate in this new world.
Correct. So what does that tell us about the test?
that it's incomplete right now.
Okay, maybe. What else can it tell us about the test?
He's kind of passed it till now. He hasn't overstepped.
Well, he hasn't been given the opportunity, perhaps,
well,
according to what Sharon is saying.
He was angry that he cursed the day he was born, but he didn't say, like you said before, the fact that he's arguing means he agrees.
Or, what if the answer is that this is a test about what you feel inside, regardless of whether you'd be able to implement it in action? This is a test of his spiritual personality, if you will. And therefore, it's sufficient to have the debates, and you don't need to actually send him out in the world to act on it. I think that's what it sounds like to me. Either that, or the book is incomplete, which is a thought to shudder at 42 chapters.
What does that mean, spiritual personality?
What his relationship with God is. It's definitely changed. Meaning, he started the book as somebody who seemed fairly, well, I don't want to say the word that's coming next because that's going to blow my idea. So we'll see.
Is this a mystery?
No, I'm getting to it. Really? Elisheva.
Okay, I don't want to circumvent this, but I'm just wondering. So the generality of Yirei Elohim, so that's a huge, big topic. But what Pleasant is saying is, oh, he's just going to pick one material aspect of it to test him, which is to Yivarecha, just to blast me. So, like, if you try to boil this whole Yirei Elohim down, it doesn't necessarily mean just blaspheme. It's just one aspect. It's part of the test.
Yeah.
Once he passes that, doesn't necessarily mean he's not Yirei Elohim in other aspects of it.
But why does he single out this one?
Why does he choose this one?
Yeah.
Okay, right.
So it's a question. I have an idea, but I think that's the question. Yeah.
In a way, it reminded me of some of the arguments about what happens to Paro, why he is stricken with all the plagues, and then his heart is strengthened or hardened, whatever. And I can't remember which commentator talks about it, but someone says, basically, the purpose is to remove all of the outside influences.
Yes.
The pressure of the courtiers and the economics of Egyptian slavery, and just make him decide what's in his heart. When there's nothing left on the table except
right.
The relationship to God.
Right. So you're saying that that's what's being done to Job.
Maybe.
The taking everything out of the picture by losing his children and everything else. Well, that would also suggest then that his reason for being Yirei Elohim before was tied to all the things that he had. His health, his children, and his wealth.
Right, but that's Satan.
That's Satan's argument. Right. Interesting. So it's an interesting parallel that Shana is suggesting. She's suggesting, just to restate a little bit, tell me if it's true to what you're saying, that there's a parallel in the test of Job in the test of Paro. That the idea that Paro's heart is being hardened is, this idea, which I think is Ramban, that that he's hardened because if he decides to let the Jews go because he got hit with boils and so forth, that's because he's getting hurt, right? As I heard Rav Aaron Soloveitchik say it once, you walk into the bank, you hold a gun to the teller's head, and you say, give me your money. The teller doesn't give you the money because he loves you. He gives you the money because there's a gun to his head. So if Paro lets the Jews go because, there's hail and fire falling from the sky, that's not his own decision. So God is going to harden his heart to balance it out. But really what you're doing is blending together the reason to give him the plagues with the reason for hardening his heart, and suggesting that the whole idea of giving him these plagues is to take away everything. And then the hardening of the heart is to take away still more, so it'll just be him.
Well, it's to give him the strength or the courage
yeah.
to make whatever decision he's going to make.
I want to think about that one more. But let's go to a third possibility, which is that in this book, in general, Yirat Elohim is more about belief in a just God who runs the world fairly. For example, go back to chapter 4, please, sentences 5 to 7. It's page 1625 if you're using the Stone Tanakh. This is Eliphaz's first speech. And he says to Job, he first, before this section begins, he's We're starting with sentence 5. So he talks about how Job used to rebuke people and encourage people, and he says to Job, "Ki ata tavo elecha vatela." Now this happens to you, and you become weak. Tigadecha, it reaches you. The suffering reaches you. Vatibahel, and suddenly you're confused. You're lost. You're all upset. Halo yiratcha kislatecha. Tikvatcha v'tom derachecha. Your yirah, yirah delokim, your yirah is your strength, was your source of strength, your hope, the purity of your path. He says to him, your yirah, this is yirah delokim, your sense that there is a just God was your source for strength all along. And it should still be. Zechar na mihu naki avad. Remember, nobody who was innocent was ever lost, he alleges. Ve'efo rishayim nechadu.
Efo yisharim.
Sorry?
You said rishayim, I think.
Oh, no, okay, you know, yisharim is the correct word. Ve'efo yisharim, that would change it. Ve'efo yisharim nechadu, where were righteous people ever destroyed? The Eliphaz's allegation that the good always win. So the point is that Eliphaz says to Job, it was your yirah that was always your strength. Instead of complaining of suffering, you should recall your reverence for God, and that should be your strength. And now jump ahead to chapter 15, sentence 4, where Eliphaz is going to use the term again. It's on page 1639. And Eliphaz says to Job, with all of your speeches about how there is no justice in the world, and remember, the end of chapter 14 was where Job seemed to say that there's no life after death and there is no reward coming and so on. He contrasted man with trees. Trees regrow. Human beings are like the stone that does not. Although he had the stone having a positive end. Also, fine, leave aside the stone. Scratch the stone part. But the point is, then Eliphaz says to him, "Avata tafer yirah." You, with your statements about justice, you are getting rid of yirah, people's reverence for God. When you say there is no justice, you are expressing the antithesis of yirat Elokim. In other words, the belief in a just God who runs the world fairly. One more piece of evidence that this is what's going on. I'm not going to accept this idea in the end. I feel bad because I'm building it up. But it's going to take us to a good place, I think. If you go back to page 1623 at the top, it's chapter 1, sentence 22. Where it says that after his first round of suffering, and after at the end of his suffering, he made remarks. But b'chol zos, with all of this, lo chata Iyov, he did not sin. V'lo nasan tifla le'lokim, he did not blame God. He didn't say God had done something bad, and that's why Satan pushes for a second test. So I think that line is a very important line. That line is telling us, at this stage, because of this, he has not failed. Because he didn't say God did something wrong, therefore he is still on the good side. So it makes it sound like Yirat Elokim means saying that God is just. Blessing God, so to speak, would be a rejection of the idea that God runs the world fairly. That's this idea. In a second I'm going to throw this out, but I think for an important reason. Shana, tell me what's wrong with what I'm saying.
If the idea is that Eob still buys into the proposition that God runs the world fairly, I think Sutton wins. Because Eob has certainly considered the possibility that God is not in charge.
Oh, consider. He's alleged.
Yes.
That's on the charge sheet.
Right, he's delegated. He's just not even this at all.
Yeah. If this is the standard, then I think we have to agree Job has failed. If the standard is you have to believe that God runs this world fairly, then, you know, his three friends are really the attorneys against him, the lawyers against him, right? They have said, and correctly, that Job says God does not run the world fairly. Job's been very clear about that belief for quite a while in this book. So according to this, Job has failed the test. But tell me something. How do you know that that's not what the test is? Think about it logically. How do you know that's not what the test is?
Being.
Alicia.
That's because Hashem starts off as tipping the balance. So we know it's already not fair from the beginning, chapter 1.
Meaning? Explain that more.
There is this inconsistency, that there is room for, a test.
The fact that it's not fair. You're going to prove to Job that you run the world unfairly in order to get him to say you run the world unfairly. Right? Imagine if you have a parent with a child, okay? And parent-child allegories for what God does with human beings are common and usually wrong. But they, nonetheless, imagine if the parent says, I want to see whether my children really like my cooking. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to burn everything terribly, and I'm going to serve it to them, and let's see whether they like my cooking or not. That's exactly what happens. I'm going to see whether Job believes that I'm fair. And how am I going to do it? I'm going to hit him really hard without him deserving it. And then let's see whether he believes I'm fair or not. It makes no sense.
King Lear. And we know how it ends.
My Shakespeare is about 30 years old. Sorry.
It's older than that. The one daughter who loves him, really and truly and genuinely loves him, dies in the end. It does not end happily.
that's because he was morally blind. That's not a good parallel.
It's the same proposition. I, as a parent, am going to maltreat all of my children and see how they behave, to see if they really love them.
Right, that part I remember. Okay. Yes.
But this is really an existentialist problem, because the survivor of the war, who lost everything and still believes in God and being praised for that, it's logical that you keep believing in Hashem, no matter how hard he hits you.
But this is worse.
It's expected from you.
But this is worse. Because here, we're finding out what's going on behind the scenes. And what's going on behind the scenes is, let's be unfair.
But he doesn't know that.
Correct, he doesn't know it. But the reader does. And it makes no sense to present this to the world. It doesn't work. Unless, and this is really, I think, what I'm suggesting is, I think, where you're going with this. I think it's about loyalty. I think that's really what it's about. It's not about belief that God is fair. It's about confidence in God and in the goodness of God in general. It's about saying, I am a believer. I am somebody who is loyal to God. And Satan says, Job is loyal to God because God helps him. Not because he has confidence in the goodness of God in general, but because God has given him good things, so therefore he's loyal to God. If God is going to harm Job, he's not going to be loyal any longer. He'll be done being loyal. If he gets mistreated, then he's going to say, forget it, I'm not loyal. And blessing God means an abandonment of that loyalty. Yes?
But it also puts God in a position of being quite weak, because he could have said to Satan, what do I need you for? I mean, I'm busy dealing unfairly with X, Y, Z, and A, B, C, D, E. Tomorrow it's Job's choice anyway.
To which the answer is because this is what Satan was created to do. Satan was created to allege human beings aren't good, and that's part of the background on what Satan's role is in general. But the fact that the story is presented, keep in mind, especially if we adopt the view that this is a parable, is that the story wouldn't be recorded then. In other words, if God turned to Satan, and maybe he did on a whole bunch of other days, and said to him, go away, I'm busy, and then the book ends at chapter 1, it would be Obadiah. We need to have the rest of the story. So this is the story about the day when God didn't tell Satan to go away. Sharon.
Maybe God wants to see how bad Satan is.
can do whatever you want to this righteous man who's been good to me and who loves me again. So, you know, you can do it. How bad is Satan?
Well, in that case, the book could have been 40 chapters shorter, right? Because Satan finished in chapter 2. We didn't need to have him do all of this. Yeah.
God is a partner with Satan.
Oh, and this, they're in a wager.
Yeah.
They're in a wager. And remember, Satan being a function ultimately of, you know, God, this is all coming from God in the first place, whether we create another voice and call it Satan or not. You know, yes, the God, this is God's test, and he cannot and he won't at any point pawn it off on Satan. He's not going to at some point justify it and say, well, I didn't do it, he did it. You know, as a matter of fact, the way it was worded, remember? The way it was worded was, Satan said, see what happens if you hit Job. And God says, okay, go ahead. Right? It's the same thing. Satan hitting him and God hitting him are the same thing. We don't interpose Satan as a way of putting God at a plausible distance. Right. Yes?
You know, in this chapter 4, there's something that bothers me, and it's with sentence 3. Behold, you have rebuked many, but have strengthened with hand. That means that when other people were in a position of needing help,
yep,
he actually didn't just talk to them, but he gave them something
yep,
concrete. Okay? And here Eliphaz goes on to say, now when it befalls you, you become weary. He doesn't say, but nobody is coming to help you.
Right.
And that's missing. That if when Job had something, he was perfectly generous in helping others with concrete help, absolutely no one offers him.
Right. And that was Job's remark. Remember, but Job said to him, Job is not wrong. Oh, no. Job is not wrong. We haven't gotten yet to the conclusion of the trial of the visitors.
See,
that's coming.
But that's right there. So they keep accusing him of being tired, whatever. But actually, nobody is coming to do for him
right
what he has done
correct
for others.
Correct. Correct. I mean, the visitors don't come off well. You're right.
But so the test was that when he had plenty,
yeah,
he shared it.
Yeah.
Okay. And now that everything is being taken away from him,
yeah,
I have to say that nobody is coming to share what they've got.
Right.
So that's their test, not his.
Well, no, but I think that's part of Job's test. Is how that's why we said that the visitors are part of the test of Job, because he has this very right claim.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
I think that's part of what's pushing him further. I want to make sure to take this another step. Joyce, you were going to, because you've been very quiet. I would have. Okay.
I just want to say that the visitors have their superficial niceties. You know, you did wrong. God did this. Job knows that he did not sin. He knows in his heart, you know, that he did the right thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that you don't argue with someone from whom you don't expect justice.
Right.
You only argue him because he does believe that God is a righteous God. And he hasn't really, he's angry and he doesn't understand and he's hurt, but the thing is,
you're right, but I don't think that belief and loyalty are synonymous. In other words, I believe it is entirely possible, and the Holocaust survivor example is a perfect one, it's entirely possible for a person to believe that there is a God who runs the world, who is all-powerful and omniscient and so on and so forth, and say, and I'm not interested, and to be disloyal. Yeah, whether that's a position that, you know, anyone should hold is another story, but it is a reality that a person can believe in God and be angry at God. And then the question is, can that anger translate into rejection of God? You know, we can easily conceive of that with other human beings. You know, there are other human beings who may be perfectly good people, perfectly wise people, and so on, and yet, for whatever reason, you don't like them. You just don't like them. And that doesn't mean you think they're bad people. It just means that it doesn't work. It just doesn't, I don't want to be a supporter of that person for whatever reason. I'm gonna push a little bit ahead because there's a key piece that we have to now ask. If I am correct that the bet is Satan saying Job is not going to be loyal to you once you hit him, and God saying, yes, he will be loyal to me, has Job passed the test? Is Job still, at the end of chapter 31, is Job still loyal to God? Yes? Based on what?
Like it's a trick question.
Maybe.
He still has God in his life.
He still has God in his life? Is that, what does that mean?
He hasn't rejected the notion of God.
Yeah. And that's not what loyalty is about.
Of course it is. You can be loyal and angry.
You can be loyal and angry, but I'm saying that accepting that God exists doesn't mean that you're loyal to God.
Why not?
Because you could be angry, and you could be angry and disloyal. I accept that there are certain human beings out there who I will not name, who I accept exist, but I am not loyal to them.
He's expecting God to run his life. That's loyalty.
Is he expecting God to run his life?
He is. He says, all this is because of God. These terrible things have happened to him because of God.
But is that loyalty?
I think yes. The concept of God, yes.
Loyalty to the concept of God is not the same thing as loyalty to God.
Well, I don't understand the difference. That's a whole other...
No. I'm, in other words, if there were a... if someone was to come to me and say, I have the ability, the magical ability, to do something that will hurt God. I pretend that there was such a concept in Judaism. Okay, I have the ability to hurt God. Would I sign on to it? Or would I immediately go running to God telling him about this person's plan?
You would only sign on to it if that's what you wanted to do for some reason. If that was,
but that's what I'm saying. Being loyal means that I'm emotionally in it. Means that I feel a connection.
Okay.
Who would I take first? Husband or wife?
Being loyal to the
comment. He has three times. Okay. You've been talking too much.
But next week.
Oh boy, we're going to ship you guys back to Montreal. Carla.
I was just thinking, if you look at the second part of the previous chapter 31.
Yes.
Eeyore is calling out in utter despair, and people proclaiming that if he would have done this, he would have meant that he would have denied God, but he did not. And in the end, he is just calling on God to listen to him. I wish he would listen to me.
Yeah.
Which, in the end, will evoke, of course, the answer from God. But at this point, he is calling on God, like, merely explain to me.
Does that mean he's loyal or not loyal?
I think he is, because otherwise you don't seek an answer, you just reject.
In French, you call it engagé. There's an engagement with the other's party.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's loyal in the sense that he's still trying to find an answer.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to understand.
Right.
In that sense, he's loyal.
Right. And I think that's a reasonable argument.
And also, it's between me and God. So therefore, God must answer after all these. This person clearly failed to give an answer. Right.
Yeah. And I'll take you one step further. Go back to chapter 13, sentences 15 to 16. It's page 1637 in the Stone Tanakh. Among our favorite verses in the book. It's sentences 15 and 16. Hey niktaleni, lo ayachel. Ach derachai al panav ochiach. Gam hu li lishuach. Hilo lefanav chanef yavau. Right? I'll use the R scroll translation, recognizing that there are multiple. But were he to kill me, I would still yearn for him. I will justify my ways before him. He will also be my salvation. But a hypocrite, as in my three visitors, will not come before him. Right? He spent a lot of time talking about his visitors and saying, you guys are the disloyal ones. So I think that you can make the argument that Satan has lost. Job has won. He has demonstrated his loyalty to God, even as he's good and angry. And I think that's important for a reason that... Let me hold the reason why I think it's important, because there's another side to this. the other side, and this is in the sense that it's a trick question, because I think both sides are true, is that, go back to chapter 16, sentence 9. It is page 1641. It is, sorry, chapter 16, sentence 9. Yeah, there it is. In which he's describing what God has done to him. And he says, Apo tarat vayistimeni, charak alai bishinav, tsari yiltosh einav li. He says, his anger, I'm using the article translation, his anger has torn at me. He has despised me. He has gnashed his teeth at me. My foe, my enemy, casts barbed glances at me. Who's the enemy? Do not use the art scroll footnote.
The world is the enemy.
No.
God.
God's the one who's done it to him. Rashi is so horrified that Rashi says it's the Satan, and that's what the art scroll footnote notes. What's the problem with that explanation?
Because Job doesn't even know.
Job didn't read chapter 1. He doesn't know this is the Satan.
Would you say that at some point you realize this is a trial of God?
Well, that's the thing. That's what Job has been trying to do. You've missed. That's what we're saying. The book begins as a trial of humanity, and Job turns it into a trial of God. That's the point. But the point is, because of him.
Yeah.
But the point is that he calls God an enemy. He declares God unjust throughout the book. We've seen it repeatedly. That's why he has all this language of litigation. You could argue legitimately that Job has failed the test. You could argue legitimately that he has come to view God as his enemy, and that is not an act of loyalty. There is this concept, the frenemy, right? The possibility that, yes, he sort of loves God, but he's also angry at God, maybe. But I think really, you could legitimately read Job as passing the test and remaining loyal and wanting a relationship, and you could just as legitimately read Job as having failed it. And I think that's going to matter, because when we get to the end of the book, in chapter 42, we will see how the commentaries on God's response to Job are split. And some of them, I think, as I'm reading them, I think some of them believe he passed the test, and some of them believe he failed the test. I don't think it's a simple answer. Shana?
Just a personal anecdote. My mother, Elena Shalom, was a shul rebbetzin, and there was a macher's wife who was a thorn in her side. And when she died, my mother said, "We were enemies so long, we might as well have been friends."
Yes. There is such a concept. There is such a concept. But I think that if you argue that Job actually passed the test, if you argue that Job maintained his loyalty, maybe that's why, at the end of the book, he is going to merit a response from God. One of the things that I said when we started this, you know, a long time ago, 48, 49 weeks ago, one of the things that I said back then was that Job is not the only book in Tanakh in which these issues are debated. There are other places in Tanakh where the problem of apparently good people suffering and bad people thriving come up. Whether we go to Moshe, or whether we go to Habakkuk, or whether we look at in various places, I quoted them then, Yonah, you know, we talk about the problems with divine justice elsewhere. What's unique about this book, you have it a little bit at the end of Yonah also, but what's unique about this book is that God is going to answer. He's going to actually say something about it. And maybe the reason why God is going to speak up in this book is because Job has passed the test. If you can still be loyal after everything you've gone through, then you deserve a response from God.
Maybe
that. Sorry? Well, he doesn't get restored.
Well,
let's be, you know.
His life is replaced.
Right. His life is replaced. He has a new life, not the old one back, which is an important point, you know, in terms of how we look at what happens in chapter 42. Sharon?
I'm getting the impression, as we go through
through the hill, then everybody would be tested. Friends would go, and you know, all the other people who have anything to do with them.
Right. And Job is the main character, but certainly the supporting characters, so to speak, are undergoing either tests or evolutions to a certain extent of their own. And that's one of the points that Newsom likes to make, is that you can't just read them as caricatures. Like, they're figures in this story, too, and there has to be a depth to who they are. How much we're going to focus on them is another story. So what should happen at this point, if all were rational and reasonable... What should happen is this. Chapter 31, Job has finished his remarks. We've now determined that it's unclear whether he has passed the test or not. And now God should give his response. However, chapters 32 to 37 happen instead. There's this gentleman named Elihu who is about to give almost an entire chapter on why he is speaking to justify the importance of his remarks. And he is going to tell us his point of view on Job's suffering. Not only that, he's going to say everything that everybody else has said until now is all worthless and terrible and wrongheaded. And then he's going to proceed to say things that sound awfully similar to everything that the three visitors said.
Closing arguments.
But that's the thing, it's not closing arguments. Because in closing arguments, what you say is, for the last X number of days of the trial, I've been trying to prove this, 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 and this. What he does is, for the last X number of days of trial, all of you guys have been saying things that are complete hogwash and don't make any sense, and you haven't said what needs to be said, so I'm going to now say it, and then he proceeds to rehash their remarks as closing arguments.
So he's for the defense.
Well, we don't know what he is. He's a defense of what?
What does the name mean?
So we're going to talk about that, but essentially Elihu can either be rendered as, he is my God, or my God exists. Who can be read as Hoveh, as in he exists, is. So, he's clearly a defender of God. That's very clear. And there are all sorts of weird things about him and what his role is in this book. I thought that we would spend, you know, half the time today on the question of has Job won or lost, and then the rest of the time on introducing Elihu, but that's not going to happen. So we'll introduce him next time, but I think you understand. I hope you follow now why I sent out the introduction to this class in the email as I did. This is the big question that we have to face. The other big question we have to face at the end is the trial of God. And the question of where God comes out at the end of everything. So that is still in the offing because we have Elihu sitting in our way. Okay.
Hi. Good job.